God blesses those who are persecuted for doing right, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. From Isaiah chapter 61, beginning at verse 1. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, for the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to comfort the brokenhearted and to proclaim that captives will be released and prisoners will be freed. He has sent me to tell those who mourn that the time of the Lord's favor has come, and with it the day of God's anger against their enemies. From Matthew chapter 11, beginning at verse 1. When Jesus had finished these instructions to his 12 disciples, he went out to teach and preach in towns throughout the region. John the Baptist, who was in prison, heard about all the things that the Messiah was doing. So he sent his disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you the Messiah we've been expecting? Or should we keep looking for someone else?" Jesus told them, Go back to John and tell him what you have heard and seen. The blind see, the lame walk, those with leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised to life, and the good news is being preached to the poor. And he added, "God blesses those who do not fall away because of me." And from chapter 14, beginning at verse 1. When Herod Antipas, the ruler of Galilee, heard about Jesus, he said to his advisors, "This must be John the Baptist risen from the dead. That is why he can do such miracles. For Herod had arrested and imprisoned John as a favor to his wife Herodias, the former wife of Herod's brother Philip. John had been telling Herod, 'It is against God's law for you to marry her.' Herod wanted to kill John, but he was afraid of a riot because all the people believed John was a prophet. But at a birthday party for Herod, Herodias' daughter performed a dance that greatly pleased him. So he promised with a vow to give her anything she wanted. At her mother's urging, the girl said, 'I want the head of John the Baptist on a tray.' Then the king regretted what he had said, but because of the vow he had made in front of his guests, he issued the necessary orders. So John was beheaded in prison, and his head was brought on a tray and given to the girl, who took it to her mother. Later, John's disciples came for his body and buried it. Then they went and told Jesus what had happened." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be unto God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. John the Baptist deserves better treatment than this. But from behind prison walls, he gave his disciples a message to take to his cousin, Jesus. John's problems began when he denounced Herod for marrying his brother's wife, and he called it what it was, adultery. And Herodias would not let him get away with just imprisoning him. In her wickedness, she sent a message to her daughter, who had danced a seductive dance, strutting before a crowd of Herod and his drunken generals. And the message was, "I want John the Baptist's head. I want it on a tray." He regretted ever having said, "I'll give you anything you want," but that lust that drove it and the fear of his audience caused him to send the word to the prison. and execute John. Even before Herod reached his verdict, John was asking questions, and his questions, his issue, was one of despair. When John heard in prison what Jesus was doing, Matthew said, he sent his disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you the one who was to come? Are you the one we were expecting? Or should we look for someone else?" You remember, John was the forerunner of Christ. He was the one who said, "I make straight the paths, I make level the mountains so that the King of Glory can come in." And having preached and having great crowds come to him, and many, many people baptized because of his ministry, now he's in prison. And he hears from prison all the miracles, all the wonders that Jesus is performing. And there's in John's mind a disconnect somewhere. What he had been doing, what Jesus is now doing, and where John is in the middle. And so he asks, "Are you the one who's to come? Or should we look for someone else?" John's question expresses doubt. Have I been following the wrong Lord? Now, if the Bible is an ordinary book, that passage does not appear. Because you don't write a religious book and you have one of your leading characters in it express doubt about the person he's the forerunner for. But this is no ordinary book. It was inspired by the eternal God, who knew that every disciple from that day on would sometime spend time in the dungeon of doubt. I've been there. I guess you've been there. With doubts that I would be embarrassed to tell you. And so I won't. But I've been in that dungeon of doubt. And these questions are what faithful suffer at the hands of the faithless. Anytime a person takes a step in the right direction, only to have her feet knocked out from under her, that question is asked. Anytime a person does good deeds but suffers evil consequences, that question is asked. Anytime a person takes a stand only to end up flat on his face, the questions are asked. If God is so good, why do I hurt so bad? If God is really there, why am I here? What did I do to deserve this? Why are the righteous persecuted? And maybe the biggest question of all, why me? Why this? Why now? In his book, Disappointment with God, Philip Yancey quotes Meg Woodson, who lost two daughters to cystic fibrosis, an insidious disease that causes thick mucus to gather around the lungs and eventually causes death by suffocation. And before it gets to that point, it affects the digestive system and the reproductive system and virtually every other part of the body. And Meg Woodson said, at her daughter's death at age 23, "I was sitting beside her bed a few days before her death when she suddenly began screaming. I will never forget those shrill, piercing, primal screams. It is against this background of human beings falling apart that God, who could have helped, looked down on a young woman who was devoted to Him, quite willing to die for Him to give Him glory, and yet decided to sit on His hands and let her death top the horror charts for cystic fibrosis." Does God sometimes sit on His hands? Does God sometimes choose to do nothing? Does God sometimes opt for silence even when I'm screaming my loudest? Is the problem God's silence or my ability to listen? Jesus told John's disciples, go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, dead are raised, the good news is preached to the gospel of the poor. This is Jesus' answer to John in his agony and in his darkness of doubt. Are you the one who's to come, or should we expect someone else? And Jesus did not save John. Instead, he said, tell John everything is going as planned. The kingdom is being inaugurated. And the words back to John was from Isaiah's writings and from Jesus' lips. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. The Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor, comfort the brokenhearted, proclaim to the captives that they will be released and prisoners will be set free. He sent me to comfort those who mourn and tell them the time of the Lord's favor has come. Jesus' words are the description of a heavenly kingdom being established, the kingdom where the rejected are received. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear. No people in their culture were more shunned, despised, and pushed aside than the blind, the lame, the lepers, the deaf. They had no place, they had no name, they had no value. But those people that were called trash by the crowd were called treasures by Jesus. That must have been what the psalmist had in mind when he wrote Psalm 139. You knit me together in my mother's womb. Listen to the whole paragraph. Psalm 139, 13 through 16. You made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb. You saw me before I was born. Think on those words. You were knitted together. Or maybe you were crocheted together. You aren't an accident. You were deliberately planned, specially gifted, lovingly positioned on earth by the master craftsman. Paul told the Ephesians in chapter 2, verse 10, we are God's workmanship. And in a society that has little room for second fiddles, that's good news. Jesus' plan is a reason for joy. Jesus told John that a new kingdom was coming, a kingdom where people have value not because of what they do, but because of whose they are. This is a kingdom where the grave has no power. The dead have life, Jesus told John's followers. On December 22nd, 1899, Dwight L. Moody, the great evangelist, was dying. He began to speak in slow, measured words. Earth recedes. Heaven opens before me. And his son, Will, who was standing close, hurried to his father's side and says, Father, you're dreaming. And Moody said, no, Will, this is no dream. It is beautiful. If this is death, it is sweet. God is calling me. I must go. Don't call me back. And at that point, the family gathered around the bed. And moments later, the great evangelist died. It was his coronation day, a day that he had looked forward to for many years, and now he was with his Lord. At his funeral, many remembered the words that Moody had said at a crusade in New York City earlier that year. Someday you will read in the papers that Moody is dead. Don't you believe it? Don't you believe a word of it? Because at that moment, I'll be more alive than I have ever been. I was born in the flesh in 1837. I was born of the Spirit in 1855. That which is born of the flesh may die. That which is born of the Spirit shall live forever. And Jesus gave John's followers this message. Report to John that the dead are raised. But Jesus wasn't through. He passed on one other message to clear the cloud of doubt in John's heart. The good news is preached to the poor. Paul told the Ephesian believers in chapter 2, verses 8 and 9, "For it is by grace that you have been saved, not by works, so that no one can boast." No other religion offers such a message. All others demand the right performance, the right sacrifice, the right chant, the right ritual. Theirs is a kingdom of trade-offs. You do this, and God will do that. You do this, God will give you that. The result? It's either arrogance or fear. Arrogance if you think you've achieved it, and fear if you think you haven't. But Christ's kingdom is just the opposite. It is a kingdom where membership is granted, not purchased. You are placed into God's kingdom. You are adopted. And this occurs not when you do enough, but when you simply admit you can't do enough. You don't earn it. You simply accept it. As a result, you serve not out of arrogance or fear, but out of gratitude. John had been listening for an answer to his earthly problems while Jesus was busy resolving his heavenly problems. That's worth remembering the next time you are hearing the silence of God. Don't think God isn't listening. He is, and He is answering the requests that you are even making. Not even making! The Apostle Paul was honest enough to write, "We do not know what to pray for." Jesus did not ignore injustice. He cares about persecutions, about iniquities and hunger and prejudice, and He knows what it is like to be punished for something He did not do. He knows the meaning of the phrase, "It's not right. It's just not right." It wasn't right that people spit into the eyes that had wept for them. It wasn't right that soldiers ripped chunks of flesh out of the back of their god. It wasn't right that spikes pierced the hands that formed the earth. And it wasn't right that the Son of God was forced to hear the silence of His Father. It wasn't right, but it happened. For while Jesus was on the cross, God did sit on His hands. God did turn His back. God did ignore the screams of the innocent. God sat in silence while the sins of the world were placed upon His Son. And God did nothing while a cry a million times bloodier than John's echoed in the black sky. My God, why have you forsaken me?" Was it right? No. Was it fair? No. Was it love? Yes. In a world of injustice, God once and for all tipped the scales in the favor of hope. And He did it by sitting on His hands, so we could know the kingdom of God. And it is a kingdom worth dying for.